Welcome back into Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is the Night Shift. I am the great Blake Schneiders, and no, I did not give myself that nickname, but I am here with the legendary Jack Johnson, my co-host. But we have two very special guests in studio, two of the funniest guys that I've seen live here, Dustin Slints and Jake Redpath of Chiefs and Chatter. Fellas, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Thanks for having us, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is sweet. Thanks so much, guys.
So I actually saw, I met Jake and Dustin down at the Casual Animal Brewing Company, which you've heard us mention multiple times when we had John Sheezer here on the show, and went there last Tuesday to see these guys perform. And actually, I just talked to Dustin. Dustin was not on the slate that night, but Jake was up putting on a show for all the fans at Casual. And you did a killer job, by the way, man. That was
you
had me rolling. Dustin, you just had me laughing off air. You know, obviously you weren't on stage, but you guys.
That's what I do.
I would hope so, because non-funny comedians probably don't have a long lifespan. So
you'd be surprised how long some of them stick around.
I was about to say that you would think that that's the case, but actually it's not.
They just keep trying. Somebody keeps giving them gigs, apparently. So but no, these guys, I met these guys at Casual Animal Brewing while they're doing their stand-up, and we got to chatting outside and found out not only are they hilarious people, but they are avid Chiefs fans. And they are such avid Chiefs fans that you guys actually told me about a watch party that you guys do. It's called Chiefs and Chatter, correct?
Yeah, we host a watch party for every Chiefs game at the Comedy Club of Kansas City. We call it Chiefs and Chatter, and it's just us, me and Jake, and one other comic. And basically, we just kind of comment on the game. Try not to talk over plays or anything, so we're not like annoying DJs at a sports bar, you know, when you go watch a game. It's kind of let the broadcast carry it, and then, you know, in between plays and during commercials, we, you know, kind of talk about the game, make jokes, do games, have prizes, give out drinks, all that kind of stuff.
So now, do you guys, what made you guys start this watch party, and how successful has it been for you guys so far?
I've always kind of wanted to do something like this, like a simulcast or something. And then the owner of the comedy club actually approached me about it. And as soon as he brought it up, I was like, yeah, full go, let's do it. And I was able to talk him into bringing on Jake and my buddy Mitchell. And it's been a fun first couple weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, we had been watching the Chiefs games together now for years. We get together every Chiefs game, and we're always joking around, having a good time. So we figured, why not do it live? Have an audience, let them have fun with us, you know?
Yeah, first they wanted me to do it with another comic who's like a big Chiefs fan. But I was like, man, like, these are the guys I watch the game with every week. Like, if you want show chemistry and like it to just flow naturally, this is the way to do it. And They said yes, and we've been having fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as Jack will probably tell you, you know, me and Jack have been working together now for, is it a full year?
About a year now, yeah.
Has it been over about a year, maybe a little bit over?
Mm-hmm.
Just to have somebody thrown in there that you haven't really worked with before, it's always a little rough trying to get the cogs to get greased up in the machine and whatnot. So and the fact that you were able to bring Jake in and say, hey, we already got this, man. Like, let's smooth this thing out and make it real cool. But for the fans, as far as the fan reception, what have you guys seen so far?
Turnout-wise, you know, we could always use more butts and seats, but, you know...
Well, that's why you guys are here on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
But, you know, as far as being a new concept, I'm pretty satisfied with the turnout so far, and we've actually, you know, we've already got a couple, like, fans that have shown up, you know, all 3 weeks and that love the show, and we were concerned, you know, our main concern was not being annoying during the game. Like, we didn't want we wanted people to leave and say they had fun, not be like, man, we tried to watch the game and you guys just wouldn't shut up, and... We kind of went to like a crowd poll after the first game, and like, you know, what'd you guys think? Did we talk too much? Not talk enough? And they were like, "We love you guys. Do more. You guys are funny." So, the people were liking it so far. So,
yeah, I don't think that anybody has left and not had a great time when they've come to Chiefs and Chatter. So,
you brought up a point of this where you guys do prizes, give away drinks, give away stuff like that. So, how is that working? You just mentioned, you know, you don't want to talk during the game. You're not talking over plays. So, is that more pre-game stuff, halftime stuff, where you're giving stuff away?
Usually late in the second quarter, kind of how we've been doing it, late in the second quarter, mm-hmm. when we get close to the two-minute warning, that commercial break, we'll kind of start like a game. Like, we have Jake go up there and put his arms in a circle, and we have a foam football that people throw, and if you make it through his arms, then you win the prize, unless someone else makes it, then it keeps going until someone makes it, and you win a shirt, or we got koozies, we got a few things.
Do you guys got custom gear that you guys bring, or does the comedy club, the KC Comedy Club supply some of that stuff, or...
So far, I've just purchased some Chiefs gear. We got an Amazon gift card, and then Jake used to work in an engraving shop, and so he was able to get us some
Yeah, I got some pretty sweet stainless steel Chiefs koozies.
Yeah, they're really nice. No, not cheap.
They're
stuff.
A hit. They're a hit.
I could use. You can't have enough koozies for as much as you go out for tailgates, stuff like that, watch parties. Now, and how this works here, how early do you guys usually show up? You know, is there any pregame festivities you guys do or anything that the brewing company puts on, or is it more so that you kind of can filter in for
the comedy club?
The comedy club.
The comedy club. Met him at the brewing club.
Brewing company. The comedy club. This is the third time we've mentioned that too. We always get them switched up here, but it's usually that people show up hour before kick, 30 minutes before, or just kind of filter in whenever.
So the doors open like 45 minutes before, and people tend to show up right around kickoff, but we do have a few people that show up about 30 minutes early. We get there an hour and a half before just to make sure all the cords are on, all the tape's down, no one's tripping over anything, make sure everything's safe. But yeah,
we don't need any hard injuries off the field at the. I know people can get hurt during comedy, you know, especially if they're moving around a lot. But let's try to keep it safe, you know. But as far as like you know, you talked about how you guys set this up and how you guys came to it. How did you guys become Chiefs fans?
Well, I never really had a choice. I've been a Chiefs fan my entire life. Our living room is full of Chiefs memorabilia. My mom, I mean, there's no choice but to watch the game with her. So I don't remember ever not being a fan. And also, when I was a teenager, my mom actually got married at the stadium. So it's just kind of like in my blood.
What, like on the 50-yard line? Or
no, it was in the parking lot.
Wait, what? Okay, hold on. Was it during a tailgate?
It was, yeah, pregame and a tent, a nice pavilion tent. Very nice cold day. You know, lots of some big names stopped by. Lamar Hunt actually stopped by at one point.
No way.
Yeah. Casey Wolf walked my mom down the aisle.
So, believe it or not, I've actually witnessed one other wedding at a Chiefs game. So, I thought that was a one-off, but apparently this is something that people do?
Yeah, occasionally it does happen. It's not that frequent of an occurrence. I don't know how many people have the esteemed pleasure of having Casey Wolf give their mom away, but...
I would say, how do you set something up like that? Because you got to have more space than just one tailgating spot.
And then
spot.
How does Lamar Hunt just randomly show up? Or was this like they announced it?
A lot put into it well
yeah,
before.
Yeah, they actually got like a stadium tour. Like I think the day before was probably like part of the venue wedding package or whatever. So they did like a stadium tour and got to see like all the boxes. And like they actually got to go up and see the box where like the Hunt family stays like during games, which is like living quarters and stuff up in the press boxes. It's pretty cool. And so, yeah, I think he just knew what was going on and stopped by for like a little picture thing.
So my question, I guess, is did your dad propose to your mom at the stadium as well?
This was my second or third stepdad. No, my dad's a sane person. He would not he would never get married at a stadium. Sorry to anyone who's been married at a stadium.
No. Well, like I said, I witnessed another wedding, and actually one of my buddies, they just grabbed him, and they were like, can you give away the bride? So my buddy walked her down the aisle, and he's like, I have no affiliation to this wedding at all whatsoever. So,
you know what? I might take the mascot over that.
Yeah, that's unhinged. That's insane.
I'm not going to say this was the most sober wedding I've ever been to, but because there was, I mean, I think the bride was wearing jeans. So.
My mom was wearing a custom Chiefs dress. It's like a dress with like sewn in Chiefs garb.
I feel like we need photos.
We're going to post these.
I don't have any, but if you go, I found the 1998 Arrowhead yearbook at an antique store one time. So if you can find that, I'm pretty sure that's the year. But yeah, there's pictures in there. Her dress was atrocious. Did you guys ever have to like make like wind socks in home ec?
No, I didn't have to do the wind sock. Made quite a few gingerbread houses, but...
Yeah, it was basically like windsock material that was sewn into her dress, just like Chiefs logos and
like
stuff.
Felt. She made it herself.
No, she had a lady make it for her.
Was it like Jake said, was it felt and pipe cleaners? And
I remember it not... I mean, look, I think I was 12 at the time, but I remember it not looking high quality to my 12-year-old eye.
Was it yellow or red?
A little of both.
Combination of both, just Arrowhead logos all over it.
Yeah, like literally like fabric strips that you would get like Joann Fabrics. So like I'm gonna put this like you know those blankets that people make where they like they tie all the ends.
Yes.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's starting to come together now. This picture is starting to form. What about what was the groom wearing? Your stepdad, which was it a Chiefs custom suit as well?
I want to say like jeans and a button up and a Chiefs hat. That's what I want to say.
Now, Jake, what I heard was you were actually born in the parking lot, correct?
Yeah, not to be outdone. I was born in the parking lot of Arrowhead Stadium. My mom was wearing a felt hospital gown that she had made for the special occasion. And actually, Casey Wolf did the delivery.
Casey Wolf delivered you, yeah.
He delivered me.
He's always there. Birth, marriage, death, you can hold funerals there. It's the whole shebang there. There's packages,
I guess. It was great because Jake's mom and dad, obviously late into the playoffs,
yes,
conceived and then born in parking lots. So it was a full circle.
Right, yeah. I was born the same place that I was conceived.
That's crazy. They kept him there for 9 months.
Same spot, C38, actually.
Casey Wolf is actually my godfather. Not the guy who's in the suit, but actually just Casey Wolf at any time.
Never takes off the suit.
Yeah.
That's dedication right there. Well, obviously, you guys, we want to promote Chiefs and Chatter as much as we can. So tell the people where it's at officially and let everybody know where they can get it. And then we're going to get in some Chiefs talk.
We're at the Comedy Club of Kansas City every Chiefs game. So this Sunday, we're going to be there for Chiefs versus Bucks.
And that's what, 100 and it's basically I-35 and
103rd and State Line.
103rd and State Line. Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
103rd and State Line. And it's a free event. We got drink specials. They got a full kitchen. So come out, join us, have some fun. Bring your friends.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. You can win prizes. We can buy you drinks, all that kind of stuff.
And you guys can meet both Jake and Dustin there. Now, I know you guys were listening to the show as you guys were driving in. We were talking about some of the things that were takeaways from the Colts-Chiefs game. I know that, obviously, everybody thought the Chiefs would go 17-0 this year. Not going to happen, of course. So what was your guys' biggest takeaways? Are you guys nervous at all? What were some things you guys liked, didn't like about the game?
I'm not nervous at all. I think they're fine. The Chiefs, I thought, or the Chiefs, the defense, I thought, I'm just going to start calling it the Chiefs. The defense, I thought, looked incredible, especially being down McDuffie and Gay. I thought they really held their own. You know, the only touchdowns they gave up were one that was given away on a muff punt and another one that was given away on a penalty. So, I mean, no complaints there. Obviously, the special teams was atrocious.
Rough on special teams. Do not like the muffed punts. And not catching that ball inside the 10.
Yeah, it was rough. And then, yeah, the offensive line I thought was pretty disappointing.
It's one thing where we spent time on it here in the opening segment talking about Chiefs and Colts, and you're going to have ugly performances like that. Nobody's really ever going to go 17-0. I know you've had undefeated teams before in the NFL, but it's times where this can bring you back to reality. It just so happened that they lose to a team that they were much better than. The Colts are a far inferior team to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, when you look at this game, you go, the Colts played, what, maybe their C-plus, B-minus game. They had a couple of turnovers. That is what could concern me there. But for Kansas City, you have to imagine they played their D-minus game. I mean, you coughed up 10 to 14 points. You had a missed extra point, a missed kick. You had a turnover at the final play of the game. Special teams were a disaster. So do you look at that and go, all right, it takes that much to go wrong, your starting kicker to be out, your starting corner to be out, your starting linebacker to be out, one of your starting edge rushers to be out, and still at the very end, you have a chance to get in field goal range. You take it at that light, or you go, hell, the Colts played nearly just as bad as the Chiefs did. That should be alarming.
I take it mostly like the first way, like it took a perfect storm for us to lose that game. But also, in those perfect storm games, in those tight games, I really do question Andy Reid's play calling and decision making. Phenomenal coach, obviously, but it just, I heard you use the words that I don't want to like step on your point, but like, yeah, he gets timid, and I think it's like you gotta stick true to your personality. And I really hated the fake field goal. I don't know what you're accomplishing on 4th and 11 when you run a 6-yard route. And to me, you know, if you got a guy that's already missed a kick and then you fake it on 4th and 11, that missed field goal, I mean, you've shown the kicker you don't believe in him. So what do you expect at that point, you know?
I think after the first missed extra point, we talk about Matt Amendola getting his contract terminated, what was it, 2 days ago, a day ago? I think his contract was terminated when he missed the extra point, because after that, the Chiefs went for two when they could have gone up by three and they make it 14-10. Then they decide with the fake field goal after he misses the field goal from, I think, 34 yards. So long before that, they were out on Matt Amendola, and that right now is a problem. If Harrison Butker's not healthy, you may just be going from kicker to kicker here, and we maybe are taking for granted, or in years past we took for granted, just how much Harrison Butker can change a game, because keep in mind, the last play of the game, They were at midfield, roughly a little bit inside of Indianapolis territory, but they were never close to field goal range. I believe CBS had the marker, like the 35-yard line. He said, there's no way in hell Matt Amendola is making a 52-yard kick here. They
I would was need ready to let Justin Reed try a 60-yarder.
Might Let's as go. Well. He's got the leg. It
Dude,
may not be accurate.
He could kick an 80, probably.
I'm sure that probably did cross the mind of the Chiefs coaching staff, just going, hell, Matt Amendola is not going to make it. We might as well get somebody who has the leg to get it there. But to me, right now, when you look at this team, where is the biggest concern? I know that you pointed out special teams and maybe offensive line, but if you narrow down to one or two guys where you're going, it's three games, it's early, but I'm concerned for them through these three games.
As far as one or two guys, I would say Orlando Brown and Mahomes himself. You know, I think he's missed a few open guys. He missed MVS wide open on that first drive. That's stuff that you clean up probably with chemistry over time, but I do think he's missed some open throws, which, you know, it happens.
Yeah, I got to go. I got to stick with Dustin on the Orlando Brown thing. I also am, you guys were talking about it before, the chemistry between Mahomes and Mecole Hardman has never been there. And at this point, I'm pretty concerned about the receiving core and that starting to gel, because I feel like we're definitely missing Tyreek Hill a little bit.
I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed is at the end of mid to end of last year, the way they were using Mecole seemed to be more of a gadget to start the game, and then that would really get him kind of warmed up, revved up, and factored into the rest of the game to where he could feel like he's in a groove. They haven't done any of that. They haven't done any jet sweeps. They haven't done really a whole lot of screens to him. He's one of those guys that I think that if you get him the ball in short distances and then let him go and make a play because of his speed, that's one thing. And let almost game plan for him. Tyreek was a guy who could create his own situations to be successful. And so far, I don't see that so much with Mecole. Now, granted, Mahomes did miss Mecole on a great route and a wide open, which would have been a touchdown. He did it twice. Right. He did it to Justin Watson and he did it to Mecole. So that's on Pat. But it doesn't seem like they're game planning for Mecole. Like, I think we saw a lot of success that they did towards the end of the year last year with him.
To me, with that, like, you kind of had to game plan Mecole in like that because Tyreek has such a fixed spot. And my hope this year was that with Tyreek gone, Mecole could step more into Tyreek's role. Obviously, he's not Tyreek, but have that established, like, these are the routes you run, and maybe just through that he would have success to where we don't have to force a game plan to get him the ball. But it just seems like, yeah, him and Pat have never really ever been on the same page. And I mean, you were talking about how Juju looked frustrated with him on that, right? It seems there's a lot of times where somebody turns their head and is looking at 17 like he's in the wrong spot.
I feel like that is not the first time we have seen that, and it is frustrating because we've heard for the last two off seasons, right, Mecole Hardman, he's going to take the jump. He finally is in that number two spot, and we got to go see it first off. I mean, we can sit here and imagine him being a number two wide receiver or being a 1,000-yard receiver. He's got to go out and do it because you are now getting to that point of his career. He was here in 2019. He was here in 2020. He was here in 2021. It's his fourth year in the league. He very well could just be this. This is what Mecole Hardman is. There may be one year where he takes off, but at the end of the day, he may just be this gadget type of player, which is fine in Kansas City. I think sometimes, though, fans will have this unreal expectation just because they're with Patrick Mahomes, they automatically can turn into a superstar. Some can. He does make players better, but it's not always on Patrick Mahomes. It can be on the player itself that maybe he can't unlock that potential that everybody saw, maybe through the draft, maybe through years past. But for me personally, I think with Mecole Hardman, this really is who he is. He is a guy that can maybe break out, give you a game where he has 6 for 102. But for the most part, he's a guy that's not going to be heavily targeted. He's going to be a guy where if he's active, three or four of his plays are going to be on reverses or jet sweeps or over the middle type of screen plays or bubble screens. We saw, as Blake pointed out, when he took off last year, it was because they were gadget plays. They were that shovel pass that Mahomes does forward when he's coming in motion. It's the bubble screen to the side where he gets two or three blockers. That's where I think Mecole Hardman shines. Oddly enough, though, they've not used that whatsoever this year. So for Mecole Hardman to reach that potential, get to that next level, it may be that. It may be getting that confidence back. But I think as a true wide receiver, I don't think he'll ever get there just because that's never been the player that he is, not even at Georgia in college.
Well, I think the fact that two rookies have been trusted over him in the punt return game so far, and if you in your contract year are not going to play your best football, then I think those are two pretty good indicators that maybe we've seen what we're going to see out of this guy.
it could be too early to ask this question, but I want to pose this to both of you guys. Do you personally see Mecole on the team next year?
I don't think so. I don't see why they would keep him unless he shows that potential that we're talking about. You know, I mean, he shows flashes of it here and there, but he's just been so inconsistent that I don't think that you can, you know, stick to that for too much longer and expect it to pan out.
In a weird way, I think the more disappointing he stays, the higher likelihood that he is here next year.
So like a DeMarcus Robinson type
role?
Well,
yeah, because if he does start to do anything, the Chiefs aren't going to pay him. I mean, why would you? If you can bring him back on a veteran's minimum contract and be like, hey, 1 year prove it deal, you know, try and prove it again, but...
I've never understood the idea of fans being upset that he would just be a gadget player. I've never figured out why that is not acceptable. I think the reason fans point the finger at Mecole Hardman and blame him for offensive struggles is because you're expecting a guy who has never been a type of receiver, not in college, not rookie year, where he was just this great route runner, can go over the top of the defense. He can with that speed, but overall, he shines as a gadget player. And I think the term gadget player is seen as demeaning or not as good. But for this offense and how it's run under Andy Reid, a gadget player can be wildly effective. And we've seen Mecole Hardman be wildly effective. I'm still on board for putting Mecole Hardman back in the punt return game. I wasn't really on board with putting Sky Moore back there. I'm not really on board with putting Isaiah Pacheco back there. Because if Mecole Hardman is not going to be a massive contributor on the offensive side of things, why not make him a massive contributor in special teams, which he was in his rookie season in Kansas City?
That's where I go back to trust, man. Like, Pacheco, McDuffie, and Moore were all getting more looks than him in the preseason. To me, he should have been your established return man this year. And
I agree.
Why not? Is that because of health, or is it because you just don't trust him? And we've seen him put his fair share of kicks on the ground.
Yes.
Well, so. And I will say, to play a devil's advocate, I think a lot of they said in the beginning, we're not going to have Mecole back there because he's going to be a bigger part in this offense. But we haven't freaking seen it.
Is that what they're saying to protect Mecole?
Well, that's what they said in the beginning of the season. So even before the lack of production so far through three games, they said we're not going to have him back there as much. But if you're not going to have production from him, and Sky right now is looking a little shaky, why not go with Mecole as the punt returner? Or why not, you know, do something? And like, to your point, Jack, with the gadget plays, I don't know why people, when people say, because they use this as a negative connotation to say somebody isn't going to be the every down player, but look at how many people were great at gadget plays.
Absolutely.
Guys like Dante Hall, guys like Devin Hester, Johnny Knox, guys who, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson was a gadget player forever, and in his ninth season, all of a sudden, he's become a perennial running back who can actually play. Shout out to the Jayhawk Conference here and the JUCO Conference of Kansas. But you look at guys like Taysom Hill, his entire career, he got $64 million contract or $54 million contract based on gadget plays.
That's a crazy contract.
And the fact that he got that contract in the first game he played this year, gadget plays out the butt, and it basically won them that game. So I don't know why it's such a bad thing to say, hey, we're going to come up with four plays a game that are your plays. These are where you're going to get the ball directly on a jet sweep, on an end around, whatever it is. You got to make four plays count. Now, obviously, you're still going to be running main routes, but there are four trick gadget, whatever you want to call them, plays that we're going to specifically design for you, see what you can do with them. Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't either. I think fans tend to like gadget plays, and like gadget players tend to become fan favorites, like underdog kind of guys.
But exactly.
I think when you look at the capital attached to him, a second-round pick, in the middle of all the Tyreek stuff, so I think a lot of people were anointing him as like, this is the Tyreek replacement. And then you look at he was taking a few spots over DK Metcalf, so those are the expectations that are locked into the back of people's minds. And I think that's why he's a little more disappointing than, you know, a regular second-round bust.
100%. I do think that part of it is the expectations that were put upon Mecole Hardman that he was never going to really live up to begin with, you know? So it makes sense why people, you know, maybe are a little bit disappointed, but also he had some pretty high expectations.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back here, we'll continue our NFL talk. We're right now talking with Dustin Slentz and Jake Redpath of the Kansas City Comedy Club. And reminder, they have their Chiefs watch party and will be having their Chiefs watch party this Sunday night against the Chiefs and Buccaneers. It's called Chiefs and Chatter. They've got prizes to give away. It's a great environment. There'll be drinks down there. It's a great spot to go and watch the Chiefs hopefully bounce back against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, regardless if that game's in Tampa or if it's in Minneapolis at U.S. Bank Stadium. But we'll take a break when we come back. More NFL talk right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back into the night shift on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders and joined by Dustin Slentz and Jake Redpath of the Kansas City Comedy Club. And they have their Chiefs watch party, as they do every Sunday, but especially this Sunday night for the Chiefs and the Bucks, called Chiefs in Chatter. And they'll have prizes to give away. It'll be a great time down there. They'll have drinks. And this will be at the Kansas City Comedy Club, which, remind me again exactly where you can find it.
The Comedy Club of Kansas City is at 103rd and State Line. You can go to the website, thecomedyclubkc.com. If you click on the thing that says tickets, it is a free show. I just want that to be clear. We're not charging admission, but you can like reserve tables if you like want a table up front or something like that. But yeah, free show, drink specials, prizes, giveaways, games, all the fun stuff.
I will say I have personally been to the Kansas City Comedy Club 4 times now, seen multiple comics, a lot of them local, a lot of them national. It's fantastic. The atmosphere is fun. The food is good. The drinks are good. It's just a good atmosphere all around. Always a good time.
Yeah, love it. Love it at the Comedy Club. Great place to do a little bit of stand-up comedy. They got a nice room, good crowd. So
yeah, Kansas City's got a strong local scene, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, before we get into some more NFL talk, and actually there was two bits of breaking news that are not related to One's not related to sports, one of them is not related to football in general. Aaron Judge just tied Roger Maris. He had his 61st home run tonight in Toronto.
I can't believe they didn't walk him.
Ties the American League record now. He just needs one more with only a few games to go. And number two, not sports related, it is announced, TMZ put it out. I've also seen a couple more tweets, so I think it's legitimate.
I think we've verified it enough, but you never know.
Well, you played the music, so it's over now.
Yes. Coolio died today in L.A. at 59.
RIP.
Hate to see it.
Awful. Yeah, there. Keep it rolling. But man, just awful news there. There was some really good news and some really awful news. But back to you guys with comedy here and getting your start in comedy. And that's one thing we did want to ask you about. And we kind of got off on a tangent of Chiefs football, which, of course, nobody here listening is going to mind at all. But before we wrap up your guys' segment talking some around the NFL and major headlines. You were in Detroit this last weekend, but tell us about your guys' start in comedy. How long you guys have been doing this? What got you into comedy and why you continue to do it today?
I started doing comedy about 9 years ago. I've been doing comedy since I was 19. So I was just a teenager trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I always loved stand-up. I used to stay up late and watch Comedy Central super late at night, and it just got me into stand-up, and I was like, I got to try this at least once. And once I tried it, I was just hooked, and I just started doing it basically every day.
So you were – so what? How old are you, Jake?
I'm 28.
28. So you're my age.
Yeah.
So what, you grew up watching South Park, Chappelle Show, Last Comic Standing,
yes,
all of those things. Now, as far as some of your favorite comics that you grew up with, I was always a massive George Carlin fan. Because
yeah,
my friend had HBO. We didn't have it in my house because – you know, parental control. But my buddy had HBO, so we'd always go over there, and then like we'd stay up late, and George Carlin would come on, and like blew my mind his comedy. So that's really the guy who got me started. Who was some of the people that you liked that was like, wow, that looks really fun?
So one of the guys that I really got into when I was younger was Christopher Titus, because he would go and he would talk about how crazy his family is. Like, I got this crazy family. And that really resonated with me because I have a bit of a crazy family. And so it was cool. It was cool. That was what really, he was the first guy that like really hooked me in.
So as far as, now you have to elaborate why, like what parts of your family are crazy, and hopefully they're listening so they can shame you later for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a really big family on my mom's side. I like to say, I mean, I was, you know, we're white trash. We're a bit white trash. It's true, you know.
I was wondering why you're wearing that trash bag today. I thought it was a fashion statement, but
no, I was born like this.
In the Chiefs parking lot.
Yeah, in the Chiefs parking lot, delivered by Casey Wolf. No, I mean, we, you know, like I have sort of some crazy aunts and uncles. Like I talk about it a little bit in my stand-up, but like I have an aunt who had some houses burned down because she fell asleep smoking cigarettes when I was a kid. And I, when I was a kid, I didn't realize that she was just doing insurance fraud, you know? Like, I thought, I was like, oh, cigarettes make my Aunt Mary sleepy.
You realize, oh, she's actually just collecting money over and over and
she's
over
She's doing
again.
Really well now, dude. She's got like a little farm, some animals, you know? Can't complain.
And a lifetime supply of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Did she get a sponsorship by either Camel or Pall Mall?
Marlboro.
Marlboro, yeah. There we go.
Marlboro lady.
Now, Dustin, what about you? With your comedy background, what got you started, and what keeps you doing it today that makes you want to go back up on the stage every single night when you go out there, whether it be the Kansas City Comedy Club, or as you mentioned, you were in Detroit this last weekend?
So I had a much later start age-wise than Jake. I always kind of peripherally been interested to always listen to stand-up and watch stand-up. And then, you know, I got into podcasts and listened to, like, people that did stand-up talk about, like, how they got started and, you know, I would go and Google open mics, and I would just never really do it. And then I blew my knee out in a pickup basketball game, and I was like, well, I can't have fun playing sports anymore, so I guess I'm finally going to do that comedy thing. And had a good set my first time. It was 7.5 years ago. I started when I was 28. Had a good set my first time, and just never looked back from there. I fell in love with it. I love being on stage. I still go to open mics almost every night of the week. But yeah, 7.5 years, it's been a lot of fun. I feel like, you know, I came out of the gate. I got through like rookie ball and high A ball pretty quick. Then I hung around double A for a couple years. And now I feel like I'm like an everyday player in triple A, and I'm starting to turn some heads, you know? So hopefully
that's
start paying some bills.
That's a great way to look at it, because everybody listening is like, I know exactly what he means right there. So how do you get yourself exposure? Of course, you're going to comedy clubs. You said open mics, right? And when you are a comic, it's not as simple as just immediately doing one stand-up routine and then boom, you got a Netflix special. It is a long grind for you guys.
It is a grind, and you have to be willing to do it almost every night or you're not going to get good. It's the only way to get good is to suck.
Comedy has a really, it's really good about checking your ego at times where you're feeling good about yourself. The show that Blake came to at Casual Animal, actually, I felt like it went, you know, it was a good show. I feel like I did
it
right.
Show.
This guy that was in the audience walked up to me afterwards, and I was feeling good about my set, and he walks up to me and he goes, hey, man, like, that was really awesome. Like, thanks so much for, like, doing the show. He's like, I started to feel a little uncomfortable because I was the only one laughing in there. And I was like, pew, you know, just immediately.
Like, damn, man.
Damn. So he, what's
a backhanded compliment.
The weirdest thing is I almost kind of know what he means, but the way he said it is a backhanded compliment, because one, I think the crowd felt so intimate with each other because it was kind of a, it seemed like people had come together, but they weren't like talking to each other that much.
Right.
So the people that came, like the two or three people over here and the two or three people over here, and they, I felt like they felt uncomfortable to laugh. I know you saw me. I was dying.
Yeah.
And I kind of get why that guy was like, I felt like weird because other people, because I know that they were like laughing, but I could see some people looking around to see if they were okay to laugh. And I'm like, guys, they're at a comedy show. Now, granted, maybe they just thought it was because they were at the bar and maybe it was their first time, but I was dying laughing, and I know he was dying laughing too. So that's just a weird comment to make, because you're like, thanks, but also my that high I'm running, I can see how that tanked real quick.
Definitely.
Bar shows like that, people throughout the crowd have different experiences, because, you know, comedy's about proximity. You know, the more people you have on top of each other, the more like willing they are to laugh. So in bar shows like that, you sometimes, you have people that can get completely different experiences. But I mean, I love bar shows. They're independent shows rule.
I love them. I love them a lot too. I you know, they can be really hit or miss, like you were saying, you know, because you're getting a bunch of people. Sometimes they don't even know
sometimes
that there's
comedy
a comedy show that's about to happen.
Sure guy talking, you know?
Who's that crazy having the mic in front of there?
I people just, you know, will come up and tell you what they honestly think about your stand-up so quickly. There was another time at a place that we do a lot of shows at, the Mockingbird Lounge, which Dustin hosts an open mic there every Sunday. I was there sitting at the bar after my set. I tanked so hard. I had just eaten it so hard. And this lady walks up to me and she goes, hey, who told you that you could do this? She goes, no, I'm just kidding around. But that was really horrible, though.
How do you, like, how quickly, we've asked this before when we've had comics on the show, but how do you know? Of course, that sounds like a stupid question. How do you know when things are going up? Like, how early into a set Do you go in there and you go, this probably is not going to be very
first
good.
Joke. First joke doesn't land how you want it to. I start sweating, dude. And I'm a sweaty guy to begin with. You know, I'm real greasy. And the first joke doesn't hit, dude. I'm sweating immediately, and I'm hoping that the next one can reel him in a little bit.
Is it set up like that where it's like first joke has to be the best, has to land to reel everybody in, and if that doesn't work, you go, well, the rest of them aren't going to be that good.
You stole my question right out of my mouth. That's what I was going to say. Is like, do you line it up with big hitter and then finish with your best hitter, or do you sometimes just go, we're going to start with the best one?
So I always start with it maybe not my best joke, but one that I feel like is consistent. It gets a consistent laugh. It brings people on board with me and what I'm about to do. And then we sort of go from there, and I try to end on, you know, usually my better jokes, maybe some dirtier material later in the set, that kind of stuff. So that's how I do it. That's how I structure my sets. I don't know about you, Dustin.
I think it's important to have a strong opener. For me, I try to do something that's about me and like mostly neutral and relatable for everyone. You know, like I'm not going to get into politics in general very often on stage, but I'm certainly not going to do it in the first, you know, 60, 90 seconds. You know, just, yeah, the point of the first joke is to get the crowd on your side. And the first, yeah, like Jake said, if the first joke doesn't go well, that makes the rest of the set harder. But also, it is fun to try and dig out of that hole. And those are some of the most redeeming sets is when you're struggling, and then you get that moment comes where you're like, ah, I got them. They're with me now.
It's also something that's always fascinating to me, too, because with stand-up comedy, right? I have no experience in stand-up comedy. I've been to a couple of comedy shows. I think they're hilarious. But what always gets lost in translation is even the best out there. When you look at all the Netflix special guys right now, they'll have certain jokes that they go, I remember getting booed out of countless nightclubs. And that to me alone goes, that's why I never could do it. Because to have somebody like not think I'm funny, or have a large group of people go, that wasn't funny at all, it like has to just immediately shake your confidence. And to go through that multiple times and then eventually have what? A sold-out crowd of 2,000, 3,000 people that are just dying at your jokes. Like, that's the reward there. But, man, what you guys have to endure and the grind of it, it's impressive to me, because that's something a lot of people can't do out there, is deal with people not, like, flat-out telling them, as you just brought up, telling you, hey, you're not good at what you do. Like, Blake and I, if we have a bad show, nobody's going to be on the parking lot going,
us.
Who the hell told you could do that? It's like, if it's bad, somebody could quote tweet us on Twitter or message us, and that's fine. I mean, if you want to do that, that's okay. You can call into the studio.
I was going to say, really, I could hang up on a caller if I really wanted
you
to.
You can block the phone lines.
I just block the phone lines. We're just in here basically having a comedy show that nobody essentially in our mind is listening to, because we don't have an audience directly there looking at us doing it.
Yeah, the best we can do when one specific person doesn't like us is just try to look through them or turn our back to the other. To the
have
other
you
side
ever
of the
had
crowd.
One just obnoxious person in the crowd that?
Oh, of course.
You're this really so just heckling you from the crowd, making it uncomfortable. And how do you get through something like that?
I feel like I'm just telling stories of all the times where people have been mean to me for not doing well. But dude, I've been heckled off stage. I had a lady start singing during one of my sets. She started going like, ooh, ooh.
What? She knew she was at a show and started singing?
Oh, yeah, dude. This was at
How
a
How drunk was she?
Crazy. It was really early in the show. I'm not sure that she was even drunk. I think I was just doing a bad job. And then she just starts going, next. Next, and you're like, oh, I have to host the show. I'm gonna be back.
You will see me again.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like, if you're hosting a show, it's like, to me, the job of a host is to just never drop the baton. And the show's a relay race, and I gotta hold this baton. So getting heckled as a host is really frustrating, because it's like, if I wanted to right now, I could probably destroy you, but that's just not my role on this show. So to me, like, hecklers, yeah, they suck, but for the most part, the comic usually wins.
You know,
it's designed for us to win.
I never thought about that. Like, the role of the host and being actually just a piece in the show. So if you're the host, I guess, do you guys see people heckle as the host? Or is that really not the goal there?
Not necessarily, like, I mean, if you're
getting heckled
as a host.
Yeah, like, getting heckled as the host. There
if you're getting heckled as a host, it's, you know, probably because they're there to see a headliner and maybe you're not very good yet, or a lot of times just because they're a little too drunk or whatever. And yeah, just in those situations, it's kind of hard, because like, the most I'll do is be like, all right, that's enough. You know, the talking portion of the show is over, stuff like that. Just try to keep it mild, because the last thing you want to do is have the headliner of the feature be like, dude, like, why the hell did you go after that host? Just get over it.
Yeah,
you know?
And there's such a fine line between when somebody heckles you between like getting things back on track and making things right and going too hard at somebody. And then next thing you know, everybody else in the audience is like, whoa, dude, this guy is really mean.
And early on, the mistake that I made a lot and that tons of young comics make is that if you're going to engage the heckler and try to be funny or like make fun of them, one, like you said, you can't be too mean. Number two, you have to remember to repeat what they're saying to you into the microphone.
I have seen that in a couple
because
of videos.
If you don't do that, then other people in the crowd are like, maybe they didn't even hear that person in the front row say something. They just see a lunatic on stage laser focus in on a person for no reason. Like, that's what their perception is from the back of the room. And yeah, you can quickly lose everybody. If you don't, like, usually, like I said, the comic will usually win. The crowd wants that person to shut up too. But if you don't get them with that first comeback, you got to get out of there and get on to the next joke.
Have you guys ever had somebody, and after this, I want to know where some of the best places you guys have like had the best fan interactions with, or like that was the best crowd I've ever gotten to. But have you guys ever had somebody whose laugh was so annoying that you were like, I'd rather you not laugh. Everybody else can laugh. Sir, I need you to stop.
There's a couple local comics that I wish would never laugh because their laughs are so annoying.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, yeah, laughs can be annoying, but usually it doesn't make the show worse. It usually everybody kind of knows, like, yeah, we get it. That's an annoying laugh. And if you use the pauses right and like wait for it to happen in certain moments, you can make it enhance the show pretty easily. My favorite fan interaction actually came at a Casual Animal show. I don't know how radio appropriate this is. You guys can cut me off if you need me to.
You can self-censor.
He's
got
a dumb button. If anything goes completely south, we got a dumb button.
Okay, so a lady, she kept talking up front, and you know, I finally like said something like, "What's your deal? Like, what? Why are you talking?" And she just said, "Sorry, I'm going through withdrawal. I haven't smoked in 8 days." And I said, "Oh, cigarettes or you know the other stuff?" And she was like, "The other stuff." And I might have happened to have some of that in my pocket. And so I handed it to her and I was like, "Here you go. Why don't you step outside and take a little bit of that so I can finish my jokes?" And then she took it and went outside and smoked and came back in and sat down. And then she got like more indignant and was like, "I want to try. Like, I want to get up there." And I was just like, "You know, you're pretty greedy for someone who was just given free devil's lettuce."
I was just saying, she's smoking the wacky tobacco and then you gave her the extra green confidence.
Yeah.
And last thing, we really appreciate you guys coming on tonight and spending the whole hour of this segment with us. But and last thing I want to get into, because Blake kind of touched on it a little bit, of saying places you guys have performed, you know, whether that be in Kansas City or outside of Kansas City. You were in Detroit, Dustin, this last week. You went to a Lions game.
Yeah.
So you can dive into a little bit of that. But what is that experience like, going to somewhere where nobody knows who you are?
Detroit was fun. I went to a comedy festival out there. So that's kind of the stage I'm in, is submitting stuff, trying to get into festivals, so that I can eventually get more road work. You know, I've done some stuff around the Midwest, but yeah, I'm trying to get my name out there a little more. So I got into that festival in Detroit. That was real fun. Did 3 nights there, although all 3 nights, the comedy club I was performing in, Chris Rock was at the theater next door. So every night I would perform to 50 or 60 people and then go outside and see thousands of people waiting in line to see an actual famous comic. So that part was pretty interesting. But yeah, it's fun, man. Comedy on the road is really fun. I prefer, like, comedy locally, you always, like, you got friends there, local comics in the crowd, you know, like, your friends come to your shows. I prefer a room of strangers because I feel like I can be more myself to a room of strangers than I can to, like, people I know well, because I just get in my head, like, oh, they've heard these jokes, they know these stories, even though it's, like, maybe a little different flavor this night. Like, it's not like, some people think that, like, and they watch a Netflix special, that was just, that guy just ripped for an hour. That's 2 years in the making. So yeah, I prefer performing outside of town. But yeah, Detroit was a lot of fun. I went to a Lions game. Lions games are interesting because they show replays a little more frequently than Kansas City does. You know, we're kind of polite here, especially at Kauffman. They don't like to show controversial plays.
I hate that.
Right?
I hate it.
In Detroit, a Lions player got cheap-shotted by a Commanders player, and they went to TV break, and they just kept showing the replay over and over again to the Detroit crowd with a decibel meter on the side. So it's just like getting louder and louder. Like, are you mad yet, Detroit? Like, it's like a totally different environment. And I honestly think it kind of rules. Like, I mean, I get why you wouldn't want to get a crowd antagonistic like that, but it was a really fun atmosphere.
They don't want to stir up 80,000 people? No way.
And lastly, Jake, for you, in places where you've performed, or maybe it was kind of a room where they're all strangers to you, what's your preference there? Do you like having familiar faces in the crowd? Do you like rooms of strangers? And maybe experiences you've had when you've played outside of the Kansas City Comedy Club.
Oh, I 100% agree with Dustin.
Which, by the way, thank you to all of our friends that ever support us.
Yeah, I can't thank you guys enough, but I'm really excited for the day when I don't need you anymore. I love them to be strangers, man. I need the strangers. I also have performed all over the Midwest, you know, different places, comedy clubs, bars. A couple of community colleges. Those have been pretty interesting. But yeah, man, definitely prefer the strangers. We have a lot of awesome local comedians, local shows here that are starting to pick up steam, and people are figuring out a little bit more about comedy in Kansas City and how awesome it is. So that's pretty exciting around here.
And again, reminder, this Sunday night, you can go to both Jake and Dustin's Chiefs Watch Party, Chiefs and Chatter, at the Kansas City Comedy Club.
So, we've said it a couple different ways now. I want to clarify, it is the Comedy Club of Kansas City.
Correct.
That is the official
name. Can you just write it out for me next time we do anything?
I swear, that's going to be a running joke for
the Comedy Club of Kansas City.
The Comedy Club of Kansas City at 103rd and State Line.
That's right.
Right off 435. Mm-hmm. It is a great place to go.
Every Sunday, or every time the Chiefs are playing,
yeah.
You guys
every
will be.
Do you guys game. Do during the week? Did you guys do the Thursday game, too?
Yes.
Yeah, we did the Thursday game. So
every Chiefs game.
We'll do all the games, and then I also host a weekly open mic on Sunday night at the Mockingbird Lounge in Kansas City, Kansas. Except on nights there's Sunday night Chiefs games, then we cancel the mic, obviously. And then, yeah, there's also a Kansas City the Fountain City Comedy Festival. The first Fountain City Comedy Festival is coming up in 2 weeks, so go check that out. Jake and I will both be performing in that festival.
Hell yeah.
Find us on Instagram.
Yeah, check
us
out.
Yeah, plug your socials.
Dustin the Wind 17, just like the song by the band Kansas.
I'm at Jake Redpath burner account.
There you go.
You can find me on Instagram there.
Well, appreciate both you guys coming on again. That is Dustin Slentz and Jake Redpath from the Comedy Glove of Kansas City.
Chiefs and Chatter.
Ooh. Chiefs and Chatter this Sunday night. Chiefs and Bucks. Go out and meet them. Be prizes, be drink specials, be great food.
It's going to be fun, man.
And they can do that, or they'll be there all season long for every single Chiefs game. All righty. We're going to take our final break here, the second hour. When we come back, Joel Penfield will be joining us in studio talking some Royals baseball next on the Night Shift on Sports Radio 810 WHB.